This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 444.
I think if you really want to be in real estate and make it work, and you're showing up every single day with, like we're talking about, persistent, consistent action, it is, something is going to happen. So I think the main thing that separates people, yeah, there's mindsets behind that. There's tangible things you can do. But if you're in the game long enough, whether you're an agent or you're trying to flip or do development or you're doing buy and hold stuff, something is going to happen.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brendan Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here in the sea shed, not she shed. Somebody asked me the other day, why did you call it a she shed? It's a sea shed, with my buddy, Mr. David Green. David Green, what's up, man?
What's going on? We got some magic today coming out of said shed.
We do have some magic out of said shed today. Today's show is phenomenal. We interviewed a guest named Cole Rudd. Rude. Let me say that again. Shoot, I messed it up.
No, leave it like that. Oh, man. It'll make the outro make more sense.
It will make the outro make more sense. All right. Well, Cole Rudd is our guest today here in the sea shed, and he is a good friend of mine, a phenomenal real estate investor, and 22. The kid's like 22. He is killing it in his real estate business. So you guys are going to love that. You're going to learn about all the mindset stuff on how he does it, but equally importantly, the tactical, like how he does it. What are the things he's doing? What does he say on the phone? How does he talk to sellers? What works? What doesn't work? Where he gets his list from? All that stuff, unpacks all that today. So it's pretty awesome. But before we get to that, let's get to today's
quick tip.
Here is my quick tip for everyone today. Sometimes on these shows, we talk about terms that you might not know. For example, today's show, we talk a lot about wholesaling. You might be like, what's wholesaling? I don't know what that is. And then like, just not look it up. So here's a very simple quick tip. If you go to Bigger Pockets, there's a little magnifying glass at the top. You go up there and you click on it. And then you type in any real estate term whatsoever. And then it hit enter, and you will like get like, it's basically our search result is categorized by like forum, blog, podcast, webinar, blah, 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 people, companies. And so you can like really dig in on any topic. So don't let like, I don't understand what that is, stop you. And by the way, wholesaling is basically where you find good deals. And then you, instead of doing the work yourself, you find somebody else who wants that good deal, and you make kind of a fee for kind of being the middleman. That's kind of probably not a great explanation, but that give you the idea is you're basically making money without actually having to do the flip. You're finding the deal. You're getting paid to find deals. And there are ways to do it that work in every state. There's ways that don't work in every state. There's legal ways, illegal ways. So make sure if you're going to do wholesaling, do your homework. But anyway, the quick tip is to use Bigger Pockets to learn stuff. It's really good.
Yeah. Cole's 22 going on 52. So in today's show, we cover how to start a business, how to get out of working in the business to working on your business, basically converting everything into different steps that you can manage people. We talk about adding different streams of income to something that you're already doing well. And probably most importantly, the mindset behind how successful people operate, which as today's guest shows, they work even at a young age.
Yeah. Such a good show. So you guys are going to love it.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short Notes from Connect Invest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. ShortNotes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP.
You ever feel like your vacation rental sits empty too often? Missing out on potential income? Look, you're not alone. Many property owners struggle with underperforming bookings and the complexities of property management. But here's some good news. Vacasa outperforms other property managers in 92% of the markets they operate. They've helped homeowners like you increase their bookings by an average of 24%, turning those empty days into profitable opportunities. Want to see what your earnings could look like with Vacasa? Visit biggerpockets.com/Vacasa, spelled V-A-C-A-S-A, and get a free personalized income estimate today. That's biggerpockets.com/Vacasa.
All right. I think that's it. I think it's time to start our interview that we just did here live in Maui in the sea shed with Cole. So without further ado, let's bring him in. Cole, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast, man. Good to have you in the shed.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's good to be in person out in Maui.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the wide world of real estate investing. Actually, wait, before you do that, how old are you?
I'm 22 and three quarters. Turning 23 in May. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a pretty young age. And give us a quick, before you got how you got into real estate, give us a quick like understanding. What do you do? Like, what's your thing right now? Like set some, like, I guess I want to set the table because I want people to know like what you have right now, kind of what your business looks like. And then we'll go into how you got into that.
So how in depth do you want me to go there?
Just give us a broad overview of your current business.
So broad overview right now, we have an off-market direct-to-seller company in Renton, Washington. So we have an office, 2,000 square feet, sales managers, guys, a whole team. And right now we're doing 90% wholesale. So direct-to-seller selling those deals to other investors and then 10% flips. So we have three flips going on right now. So transitioning into that slowly, but still primarily wholesale.
Okay. And then tell us approximately like how much volume in a year do you do? Like in the last year, like what have you done? Like what kind of like revenue numbers you see?
So in the past year, we do about 6 to 8 transactions a month in the Seattle area. Wow. So before that we were in like 4 different states. So that number was higher, but right now we're back down to 6 to 8 and just comfy in the three main counties around Seattle. Yeah. Wow. So whatever that comes out to, like 70, 80-ish deals a year.
Wow. Okay. So that's crazy. I did like, I think 3 wholesales once in a 5-year period. And that was, I was impressed with myself. So let's go into how you got started. How'd you get into real estate? I mean, you're a young guy with a business that most people would be jealous of and wanting. So how'd you get
into it? Yeah. So, growing up, I grew up in a real estate family. So my great grandma started a brokerage called Rude Realty, which is one of the first brokerages
Rude?
In all of Seattle.
Like R-U-D-E?
R-U-U-D.
Okay.
My last name.
Okay.
I was like, that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Though.
Okay.
R-U-D-E.
I thought it was Rudd.
Nope.
I've been pronouncing your name wrong for like
Rude.
We've hung out a number of times. Yeah. Did we play poker together?
Yeah.
And I
am one night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I called you Rudd.
Whatever. A lot of times I just let it slide. even when I tell people the next time it's back to Rudd. So.
He pronounces a lot of words wrong. Yeah. Don't feel bad. Yeah. Rough instead of roof. Magazine instead of
I don't
of
pronounce
magazine.
Anything wrong.
Shut up. Now we accent now. So, yeah.
Exactly. All right.
So she was kind of she launched my whole family into real estate. So then my grandparents, they did a lot of commercial stuff in Seattle. They owned a bunch of buildings. She was an agent. And then my mom got in the business. She became an agent and my brother followed her. So growing up, anytime I wanted to make money or be involved at all, I was, you know, going with her to open houses, putting signs out for the open houses. Mm. I was she had a staging company on the side. So I was moving furniture around. So I was always around the business in some way. So transitioning to when I actually wanted to make money, naturally I got my real estate license at 18, 19, when I left school after a semester. And I absolutely hated being a residential real estate agent. Switched brokerages 3 times because, of course, it was the brokerage that was the problem.
Always
it was not me.
Of course.
I showed up to every sales meeting.
It's always everyone else's fault.
Yep. It was not my fault. Showed up to every sales meeting. I sat on Facebook a couple hours a day, scrolled, you know, through a few posts out there, cold called my sphere, which at 18 or 19,
yeah,
they tell you to cold call your sphere. It's like,
All your friends. So you're graduating high school soon, huh? How's that looking? You want to buy a house?
Yeah. So it was brutal. I mean, I was making like a couple hundred bucks a month just doing like showings for other agents.
Yeah.
And then the third brokerage I moved to was an off market company where they were doing every Tuesday night, they'd bring a bunch of investors in and they would show them what was going to be coming to auction that week. And they'd pretty much, then they'd go to the auction. That's how they're running their company. So I learned that side of the business and how they were creating their own inventory. And I'm like, that seems like something I can get behind because people don't care what my age is then.
Yeah.
18, 19, 20. Rather than in Seattle selling them $1 million house, they're like,
yeah,
something's going on here. So that's when I learned it. And then a couple of nights later, I was like, when I learned about wholesaling, me and a buddy were at Applebee's. So my origin story kind of started at Applebee's.
Half price appetizers?
We shared half price
so
appetizers.
So good.
Wings. It was.
That's how I survived college. That was it right there.
We were on Instagram and these other two young guys in the area had posted this like $40,000 check on their Instagram. Mm. And so I was like, what are these guys doing? If they can do it, we can do it kind of thing. So the next day he came to my parents' house because I was living with my parents at the time and up in their pretty much their attic, we started cold calling. Mm. And then for the next 3 months before we got a deal, we were just sitting up in that room, cold calling every single day.
That's cool. Yeah. Why cold call? Like, why is that the first? Now, most people don't jump to cold calling as the first thing. Usually they're like, well, I'm going to go out and drive or something like
that. Yeah. So we did that. We actually drove around like the most expensive neighborhoods of Bellevue and Seattle, like $3 to $6 million homes. We're like, we're driving for dollars.
Yeah.
And because I don't know, I always want to feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what I was doing, but I just was like, I'm going to put one foot in front of the other. So we were at the same time driving for dollars, going to all the meetups. You know, I was Facebook messaging, you know, all the guys in the area, which is what you do. So asking them to go to coffee.
Yep.
normal process. And then landed on cold calling because I don't know, I just felt we were getting the most traction on that out of anything. Yeah.
That's cool.
Let's pull a couple things out of your story here that we can highlight for listeners, and then we'll move on to the next piece. First thing, very impressive. You realize early on, this is not what I want. This does not match up with where my passion is and what my identity is. You didn't force that square peg through the round hole like we were talking about that Rosie was doing the other day. You adapted. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't like how this feels. This is not my identity. I'm moving on, which pushed you into cold calling. And I'm going to assume that was because your age group was not in a point that could help you get to the goals you wanted to get to. So calling 18, 19 year olds in your sphere looking for people to buy or sell a house was an uphill battle. But cold calling, you're calling the people that can do what you want to do. And I just want to highlight this story you're about to tell us, which is incredible, started because instead of saying, I guess I can't sell houses, I'm only 19 years old, what am I going to do? You said, well, what can I do? Which led to this awesome story that everybody else, you know, can follow in that same path if they take that same approach.
Yeah, backtracking a little bit on that point, I think that came from, I grew up a basketball player. So I remember I was like in seventh grade. I came home one day.
I love it, man.
I come home one day.
I just got the feels.
I came home one day from seventh grade from middle school, and I was like, I want to be the best basketball player. Uh-huh. I want to play college basketball. And my parents didn't give me one of the like, oh, yeah, you'll be fine. You're really good. It might happen. It was like, okay, we'll have a trainer show up here tomorrow to pick you up. And they did. And the next 5-6 years, every single day I was working out, and I got a chance to play in college. I didn't actually play in college, but got a chance. So that was so ingrained in me as long as I show up and put one foot in front of the other and do something every single day, something's going to come out of it. So even though the residential stuff wasn't working for me, I knew it was just so ingrained in me at that point that if I show up the next day, try something else, eventually something is going to shake. I'm going to meet a person. I'm going to go to the right event. There's going to be one seller that wants to help me out. And it happened. So I think the cold calling was just a piece there, but it was really the mindset behind that. That I think it was the biggest key to not just, okay, real estate's not for me, moving on.
Yeah, I have a very similar story where basketball literally created the foundation of I can.
Yep.
I didn't grow up believing that I could do anything. Basketball was the first thing in my life that I worked at and got better. And I saw the relationship between action and working and the result that I wanted. And just like you, I got super close. I actually didn't play in college. I broke my ankle when I was getting ready to go. Mm. Play there. I actually am glad that happened because I think that created a fuel that I used to do all the other stuff that I did. But I wish everyone else could have an experience like that, where you just see trying to take it all out in one shot is why people get discouraged. But just this understanding that if I just keep moving that ball forward, if I keep putting myself in the right situation, that turnover's coming my way. I'm going to be the one leading the fast break. Yeah. I'm going to get better. So at 22 years old, the fact that you figured that out young, I mean, credit to your parents and credit to you for.
And the funny part is, like, I wasn't that good for most of the time. Like, my freshman year of high school, I was, like, on the C team, wasn't that great. But I was still, like, every day, I was working out every single day, crazy, 3, 4, 5 hours a day. I wasn't going to dance. Like, I wasn't doing anything besides playing basketball. Sophomore year wasn't that great. Junior year was on varsity, finally wasn't that great. Then senior year, MVP and everything, it just all clicked 1 year. So I knew, and that's kind of how my real estate journey has been, too. It kind of all, I had a few years of struggle, and then it kind of all came together.
Well, what you did is you went all in on something, right? Yeah. Versus like you went all in on basketball and you went all in on real estate. And it just shows what happens when somebody focuses and like says, and like we kind of laughed about earlier, you're driving for dollars in like these multi-million dollar neighborhoods that you're probably not going to buy anything. Mm-hmm. Like, but it doesn't matter. You were doing something, then you tried something else and you were doing stuff and trying to, you know, like we talk a lot about focus here on the podcast. You know, David and I will talk a ton about like how you need to like pick your bridge. But in the beginning, like, you probably don't know what your bridge is. Like, a lot of people have no idea what bridge is going to get them to Success Island. So by just like trying this and you're like, oh, I didn't like the agent thing, so I'm going to try this thing. And oh, I didn't like to drive for definitely really working. Oh, cold calling's working good. That's when you lean in and you go to that bridge so hard. Just like, you know, I tried basketball. Then I leaned into it and I kept going. That's awesome.
Yeah. And like what you were saying, I think what that developed in me is like, I didn't really care about the how with stuff like mm-hmm. basketball. I didn't know how I was going to score in a game or how it was all going to shake out. So the same thing in real estate, whether it's cold calling, whatever's working, it's not worrying about the how. It's just picking a direction to go in and showing up every single day.
Yeah.
And the how usually, like if I look back at my life the past 3 years to sitting here right now, how does not make sense. It does not make sense. So,
well, you also are hitting on a point Brandon and I have been talking about a lot, which is the pivot. Yeah. Okay. You did everything you had. You threw it into basketball. You had a goal. You wanted to play in college. It didn't happen, but you just shifted all that momentum into real estate, which yeah. is why now you're crushing it. Yeah, at 22 years old, this is incredibly impressive what you put together. That was largely because this momentum you built, your work ethic, your belief system, the habits you had were formed from basketball. They translated pretty well mm-hmm. into business, where it doesn't matter if you're not tall enough or fast enough or strong enough. I always tell people in business, your athleticism is your mind.
Yeah.
Your talent mm-hmm. is your mind. And all of us have complete control over how that works out. Like we just talked with Jim Quick yesterday, mm-hmm. explaining like how to program your mind like your body. So as people are listening, I just want them to hear that's the key. You start, you build momentum. And if it doesn't go the way you wanted, you shift that momentum into something else, but you don't wait until you know exactly what you want to do before you ever start moving. So yeah. Thanks for that little segue in background.
Yeah.
Let's kind of get into where you took it after you,
cold called.
Yeah. The cold calling business.
Yeah. So like we were cold calling every single day for 3 months. And finally our first deal didn't even come from that though. So, an agent brought us this opportunity because that we were, you know, I was letting people know what I was doing. And it was this I've never done a deal like this. It was in Seattle and Sunset Hill, Ballard area, which is, you don't do a ton of wholesale deals there. And the deal was brought to us like 800,000 purchase price. And the one buyer we had actually met that we knew was buying, that we had a good relationship with, we sold them on this like, hey man, if you build up 2 stories and you build a bridge over to an ADU on top of the garage, like might be something here. And he bought it from us. And that first check was 105 grand.
No so way.
First deal ever was 105 grand. Yeah.
105 yeah. on the yeah. first deal. That's yeah. amazing.
And we had to pay a few people out, but we took home a good sure. chunk of that.
And that was like a listed, like an MLS
no,
listed
no, no,
property
no, no.
or
it
what
was? Off market.
Okay. So yeah. the agent found it off market, brought it to you. Is that
yeah.
how that, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so how my mind works is my mind immediately went to, I don't know why it went to crap. Yeah. I have the check, but what if I don't do another deal?
So
right away I was like, how can I turn this thing into a repeatable model where we can keep doing deals?
In other words, how do you make a business out of this versus like, I got a check.
Exactly. I don't know why my
huge
mind,
mental change there.
My mind went right to there.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And so we didn't spend any of that money, like none of it. I didn't get car at the time, clothes, nothing, stayed in my parents' house. And next day we were cold calling again. And then it was actually another 3 months until we got the next deal from cold calling. Or it was our first cold calling deal. So 6 months of cold calling before we get an actual cold call deal. And then from there, hired another person to cold call, another person to cold call. When I was 19, after we were 3 deals in, so we signed a 3-year personally guaranteed lease on an office and rent in, just went all in.
Yeah, went all in.
And then we had to figure it out at that point because we had some overhead. So we started filling that office with just buddies that wanted to try out real estate and do sales. And we had like 7 or 8 guys in there eventually. We're doing random markets. We're doing deals in Spokane, St. Louis, Fresno, California, Sacramento, California, all over Washington. weren't making a ton of money at the time because we weren't tracking anything. You weren't getting
$105,000 wholesale fees every other day?
No. Most of them were 20, 25. We'd get up 60 here and there, but with eight people in an office, it was chaos. I learned so much that this first year after that, but it was absolute chaos.
You mind if I jump this and take it a different direction than we normally do? Yeah. We always cover the big picture stuff, like how you did it, which we want to keep doing. Yeah. I want to dive in for a second and have you talk a little bit about how you developed your cold call skills.
Yep.
It's not just a matter of I make 100 phone calls, I'm going to get X amount, right? It averages into that. But it's just like if I shoot 100 shots, if you suck at shooting, you're not making as many, right? Like part of success is getting better at shooting because you shoot so much. So for people that want a cold call, what advice can you give that you learned about how to do it better, how to build rapport, how to recognize motivation, that type of stuff?
Yeah, I think the tactical stuff with rapport and motivation is huge. But I think before you get into that, it's sticking with it for a long enough time for it to pan out.
To get good at it.
Because no matter how good you are no matter if you have the best script, best rapport, best everything, if you only do it for 2 months and you're like, oh, I'm going to go to the next shiny, cool marketing thing that I heard on a podcast, it's not going to work. So first and foremost, stick with it. But then, I mean, for us, it's really just having quality conversations. So many, like we train our cold callers when they get on the phone with someone, when I was cold calling, to really do the best they can to adapt to that culture and find out what the real reason those people are selling is. Because a lot of cold call centers and people who are cold calling to start, they don't care about the other person on the other end of the phone. It's just, that's a check. It's a dollar sign, not a person. So they skip over a lot of deals that are there. Most people aren't going to come out and say, hey, you know, my dad passed away, I just inherited the house, or whatever the situation may be. So really not being in a rush to just get a quick number and move on. We really take the time to get to know every single person. It's harder at scale, but especially starting out, we really wanted to get to know every single person we were talking to without, you know, spending 30 minutes and wasting all of our time. Yeah.
So what have you found has worked? I want to dive into cold calling a little bit. Like, what works, what doesn't work? Like, how has it changed like over the last couple of years, or has it? Because like David said, it's not just the numbers game. You make 100 phone calls, you're going to get it. There's things that you're doing right now that are better. So first, why don't we start with who are you calling? Let's start there.
Yeah. So right now, I'll kind of put that in two answers versus like where we are now versus.
Yeah.
So right now we call pretty much everyone.
Okay.
And obviously,
pick up the phone book and just start dialing.
pretty much, we buy the whole county.
Okay.
And we call pretty much everyone.
And you look for people like have equity, you buy a list of like equity, or do you?
Right now, for how many leads we need right now, we don't.
Okay. You just call.
We just call. Yeah. When we're getting started, absolutely. We niche down into absentee lists and equity and, you know, higher equity, longer ownership, all that kind of stuff. But I think the biggest thing with cold calling is it's a separate business than your real estate business.
Yeah.
Like whether you're doing it yourself or you're having someone do it for you, it's a whole nother business. Mm-hmm. You have to track KPIs on that business. You have to look under the hood all the time, making sure people are performing, that they're being managed. Otherwise you're gonna be throwing money in a garbage can. So people look at it as just, oh no, that's just my marketing. But no, it's a marketing business, especially if you're wholesaling or flipping, going direct to seller. Your marketing side of your business is a business. Yeah, and your acquisitions, dispositions, your acquisitions is a business, it's a sales team, and your dispositions is a business in itself with networking and building a buyer's list. So,
you know, that's such a good point to highlight. When Brandon and I give webinars for Bigger Pockets, we have to talk about the lapse funnel, which is just, you know, four steps to getting something in contract. You've got leads, then you analyze them, then you pursue them, then you find success. Those first three steps, the L, the A, and the P, actually involve completely different skill sets, completely different resources. You should look at each of those like they're a different business. How do I generate leads? Who analyzes them and how do they do it? And then what's our position when we're pursuing it? Mm. When someone looks at this like it's a job and they treat everything the same, they typically aren't going to be nearly as successful. I really like that you're highlighting, you really want to take this whole process, pick out the parts either that you're the best at that you want to learn or that you're the worst at that you want to leverage off. Find other people that are better at doing those things and view it from that perspective. Is that similar to what you found as you're running your company?
Absolutely. Yeah. The biggest growth for us came when we really sectioned off every piece of our company and put a really good leader in charge of every single thing.
Yeah.
And it was hard to let go of that because I feel like I can do everything better than everyone else. So if it was up to me, I'd still be cold calling and selling stuff and selling it to our buyers. And so we have a manager of our cold callers who's really, really, we trust the guy. We love him. That's his section of the company. And from a bird's eye view, I'm always looking at numbers on that section. But besides that, I don't get involved too much as long as we're meeting our numbers. Sales team, we have a sales manager who's my partner in the business, Mike, and that's his thing. It's like his baby, that section of the company. And then I'm on the dispositions system side. And that when we got when we were scrambled and everyone's kind of doing everything, it was, mm-hmm. it was chaos, weren't making money. But when I stepped out, I said, okay, how can I make everything kind of just funnel up to me at a bird's eye overview? But we have someone who cares about the business in charge of every little piece. That's when we really took off.
Brendan, I'm curious, did you have a similar experience with Open Door Capital, splitting things up like that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I feel like that's everything that you just explained in the last 5 minutes. I want people to rewind this because that, like, that last 5 minutes might be the most important 5 minutes of any podcast we've ever done. And what I mean by that is, like, for people who want to scale, like, that is the key to scaling, is like, you run your business like a business, you have your KPIs, you know what each person's doing. And even if it's at the beginning, it could be all you. Think like, this is my, now I'm an acquisitions person, now I'm on disposition, like, yep. Think of business, and then you can put people in there as you need to. And the great thing about real estate, especially things like wholesaling and flipping, is that you make money back pretty quickly so that you can afford to hire people to this, because like, the business generates the money for these people. So in other words, like, you became a leader, like a word that I use a lot, and we talked about this with my coach Jason Dries when he was on the podcast back a few months ago, is like, I had to use the word general in my head. Like, I'm a general in a war. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a cadet anymore. I'm not a mm-hmm. lieutenant. I'm not down on the battlefield most of the time, unless like, they overrun the gates, they're now in like my compound. Fine. I'm going to grab a gun, I'm going to go there and shoot. Just like you look at the numbers at a high level. And if there was a problem with your calls coming in, I guarantee you jump in there and start figuring it out.
Yeah. And it's a hard balance to know when to jump in and when not to. Cause uh-huh. when I see stuff every day that happens, I'm like, oh, I can fix that right now.
Yes. When we interviewed Jocko on the podcast, and in his book, Extreme Ownership, he talked about this lesson he learned where he was on a team of operators that were, and they were infiltrating like a boat or something. Mm-hmm. And they were all looking down the scopes of their guns, looking for threats, which is what every one of us does when we're scared. We focus on what can hurt us. It makes sense. It's a survival technique, right? Yes, 100%. So they all get off the boat. They're all looking down their scopes. They're looking for the enemy. It was a training exercise. And he realized that no one knew how to direct any of the people where to go. Because when you're just looking for a threat, you don't understand the big picture or how to maneuver yourself to be in a better position to even address that threat. And he took his eyes off of the scope. He took a couple steps backwards. So now he can see all the troops that are on the field. They're looking for the threats. He's trusting them. And he recognized, oh, we're going the wrong way. We need half of you to go this way, half. And he makes the call. Everyone moves into it. And it was a turning point in his life where he understood, when you are doing the job, you can't do what he recognized, which was lead the people. And what you're describing is every leader's problem is that they see somebody miss a shot and they go, oh, I better be the one to get in there and get behind the gun, right? We can't have those misses. And then you lose having an entire platoon of people that you're moving into another position. So I think you're right. There's that art of, can the business survive if we're fumbling the ball this often as people are learning? Do I have to get in there and do it? But the ultimate goal is to get yourself in the position of general, just like Brendan said, because you see how all the pieces fit. You recognize the resources. Maybe I got to take this person out of dispositions and put him into acquisitions because he'll be better there. And for everyone who's going through that same struggle, it's normal. You're not bipolar. This is what all of us have to go through. It's really hard, but the longer you do it and the more steps of faith you take, it does get easier.
Yeah, I think another way to summarize that is like, I heard it one time, it's as you get spread more and more thin, would you rather have you at 40, 50, 60, 70% doing a task, or because you're so spread thin, versus someone at 80%? Mm-hmm. They might not be able to do it as good as you. That's the only thing you're doing, but they're going to do it. I think I actually heard that at the mastermind for the first time. Someone said that. And that finally clicked, because I was not doing any of this stuff then. I was like doing everything. That's the first time I clicked. And then we did the Vivid Vision. I kind of saw my business from a bird's eye overview for the first time. And then it rolls into a whole nother, like, that journey to be able to actually do that. That's a whole nother piece.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, what Cole's talking about here is we did a mastermind thing. We called it the Maui Mastermind. Yeah. Tarl and I led it about a year and a half ago now. Yeah. And yeah, like everybody in that group is still like close with each other and friends. It was a great, crazy good time.
I've done a deal with, or done a business transaction with, like probably 80% of the people from that.
That's crazy. Yeah, so it's a good indication. I don't want to dive into that too deep here, but just like, if you're not getting together, people are not getting together with people in their world, you know, like in the real estate world, in your, whether it's in your area or whether you go to a conference. And I know things have been difficult for the last year here, but just as you know, we get back in the world again, just remember there's such value in that networking and connecting deeply with people. It was just phenomenal. So anyway, all right. So I want to go back to cold calling a little bit more here. And let's talk, when you're calling somebody, what do you say? Like, what's the first, like, you got the list. Let's say you're going to call, let's say they're just starting out, right?
Yep.
Let's go there. Somebody's listening to this podcast right now. They've never done cold calling. What should they, what list should they target? Or what would you recommend their first steps for cold calling?
Yeah. So if I was just today going to, if I was right now starting in real estate and I was going to wanted a deal in the next couple of months from cold calling, I would buy and hire a higher equity absentee list for an area.
Explain what that is.
So an absentee, like most companies, you go online to ListSource or AtomData. Most companies online, they'll give you an absentee filter, which is someone that their mailing address is different than the property address. Fairly simple. And then you want to, they all have criteria. So you want to, you know, stack equity on top of that. So you don't want to be marking people with 10, 20, 30% equity. You might, if you're really good at seller financing and stuff, but just starting out, wouldn't recommend it. So get a 40 to plus equity list and you get a skip trace and you get phone numbers back. And then you want to keep it simple at first, especially as you're learning the business. You don't want to have too high level of conversations the first couple of calls, because they're going to come out off of that thinking you don't know a ton of stuff. So keep it as simple as you can and leverage other people and real estate agents if questions come up through the process. But the first call should pretty much be, hey, Mr. Seller, this is Cole. I always tell people, if they're just starting themselves, reference another, say, hey, I work for a local company. So you don't come off of a, hey, I'm a CEO of a real estate company. So, hey, this is Cole. I work for a local real estate investment company. You know, we just sold, we buy and sell properties in this area all the time. We have some money set aside for another one this month. Are you open to talking more about selling that your property at blah, blah, blah street? That does two things. It's a soft opening and it confirms the information that, yeah, they are John Smith and they do own 123 Main Street in Maui.
It's really like, I think people probably overcomplicate this a lot. Absolutely. Where they're just thinking like, oh, I need my exact script. I need to know exactly what words to say in the right order. And like, yes, you should have a list of things you're trying to get across, right? Yeah. But how important do you think, like, it being genuine, I think it's such an important thing, because I've been cold called many times before and it's like, I can tell some people are like reading off a script or it's just completely impersonal. And other people are just like, hey, you know, like I got one the other day from a KW, like Keller Williams agency. They want to like, hey, is this Brandon? I'm like, yeah, it is. I'm like, yeah, hey, this is, whatever. I work with Keller Williams down here in Kihei. We just sold a house like two blocks from yours. Got a really good price for it. Just curious if you wanted to sell it all, if you had any interest. And I was like, no, I really like my house right now, but thanks for calling. I was like, this was such a nice, genuine person. And they probably had a script of some kind, but like she was a normal person in a normal conversation.
Sure. Yeah. I think so much of it is how you position yourself in reference to the seller. So if you come in as super like, oh, I got to make 10 more cold calls today because I heard on the podcast, I'll make 100 this week. I might get a lead that might turn into a deal versus sitting down and wanting to have conversations with people. And like we're talking about making it complicated, I think it's hard not to do that when you get started out, because part of your brain does not want a cold call when you're getting started out. So you find ways to, oh, this, I got to follow the script. It's so hard to follow, or they're going to say no, or no one's answering. Yeah. So those little things I think are huge to really sit down, take the time, care about who you're talking to. And use a script, like the kind of what I just went through, use something like that, but you don't have to go 100% off it every time.
Yeah.
Conversations are going to go where they go.
Yeah, I didn't do a ton of cold calling ever, because I'm not a big fan of the phone. But I would I would send out direct mail and I would take the phone calls, right? And when I did, I had a list, like I had a piece of paper I kept with me everywhere I went when I was doing this more heavily. Everywhere I'd go, I'd have this piece of paper, a bunch of them in a stack. And it was just like all the questions I need to make sure I got. But it wasn't like a like script like, hello, thank you so much for calling me today. It was just like how long have you owned the property? Line. Yeah. And I would just like pull out this piece of paper and I would just like, oh, the next question, I got to make sure I get that question. Mm-hmm. When did you buy this property? And then I just find a way to like make it natural in that conversation. So I had a script, but it wasn't a script. Like I had a list, but it wasn't a script.
Yeah.
So that worked. That seemed to work for me.
Yeah. That's exactly what I would recommend. I wouldn't call it a script, a guideline.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a framework, maybe.
A framework of how to guide a conversation is what you're looking for. You're not looking for word for word thing. Yeah. Otherwise it gets robotic. And
would you agree if somebody's new and they're just nervous as heck that actually having words they can read is a good way to break into it until you get a little more comfortable?
Yeah, absolutely. That and understanding that it's going to suck the first few times you do it. So many people are like, dang it, that was not what I thought it was. But like with anything, the first time I surfed and last time I was in Maui, is like, you suck at it.
That's what I tell people.
And then you look around, people are like, everyone's laughing at me. I suck. I'm on the big surfboard because I'm not good enough. But throw out a little surfboard. And like, everyone goes through the same thing. The first time I cold called, I like couldn't speak English. Like the same thing. The first time I spoke like on a podcast or Zoom, I couldn't talk. So it's the same thing. It's gradually and improving. And giving yourself the freedom to sell.
That's, I think, what the secret is. If you walk in with low expectations, like I use a snowboarding analogy. I don't know a human being that ever snowboarded and crushed it the minute they got on a board. It doesn't happen.
They don't want to go back the next time after the first time.
Yeah. That was me. It was miserable. But the reason I eventually learned how to do it so was because I didn't want to waste that first experience of misery and say I got nothing out of it. It was so bad, I was going to make sure I learned. But if you go in thinking I'm supposed to be good at it, and then when you're not, you'll think this isn't for me, as opposed to, well, everyone sucks at this. It's impossible to be good at doing this without some practice. You have to get that feedback. Oh, that worked. That didn't work. When I changed my tone, I got more engagement. Brandon, do you mind if I read your quote that you have behind you? I think this is so good for the people.
Going back here?
Yes.
Sure.
For those that that struggle with that feeling of like, I don't want to be laughed at because I was on the big surfboard. Mm-hmm. When you compare yourself to the surfers, it is embarrassing that you're on the big surfboard. What about when you compare yourself to the 99% of people that are on the beach watching and they're never even got in the ocean, right? Yeah. So this quote, was it Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah,
I believe. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither knew victory nor defeat. It's such a beautiful quote. I love that you put it up here. I love thinking that all the time because it highlights the big loss is that you never tried. It wasn't that you tried and fell off the surfboard or that you didn't get on the good surfboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think people getting started in real estate, other forms of entrepreneurship, they feel like there's no margin for error. We're like, I think the reason that I've scaled and accelerated so quickly because I realized there's infinite margin of error. Like I can make as many mistakes as I want. Man. And what's the consequence is I just get to try. There's no one really keeping score. Mm-hmm. Like what's the other word? It's like a spotlight effect. You think everyone's thinking about you all the time, but everyone's thinking about themselves.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
It's like no one cares.
Acknowledging human narcissism is the best thing you can ever do for your business because they all care about themselves so much more than you.
So that was the biggest thing for me is and sports help with that, realizing that there's infinite upside and it doesn't matter how long it takes me to get there. I can fall and stumble all I want.
Okay.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm curious, have you been struggling to keep your vacation rental booked? I totally get it. It's tough to manage and keep filled. But we found something that really works. It's called Vacasa. They've seriously changed the game for a lot of the BP audience. In almost every market they're in, Vacasa manages to fill up the calendar more than anyone else. And get this, the average Vacasa user sees about 24% more bookings than with other managers. That's a lot of extra income. Curious to see what you could be earning? You can get a personalized income estimate right there. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at what Vacasa can do for you. Check out biggerpockets.com/Vacasa, spelled V-A-C-A-S-A. biggerpockets.com/Vacasa.
You're ready to open a business bank account for your new property. You know what that means? Coordinating a time between you, your co-founders, and your bank consultant. Waiting at the branch or waiting for hours on the support line. Who has time for that? With Relay, you can open a business bank account for your property 100% online from anywhere. Create up to 20 accounts to organize money by property or by categories like expenses, taxes, or investments. effortlessly collaborate with role-specific access. That means giving your cleaner a debit card for cleaning supplies or your accountant read-only access to your transactions. Own multiple businesses? Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access them all from one centralized login. Okay, I'm going off script here. That is cool. It's annoying that I have to log into 10 business accounts with my current bank. So go sign up for RelayFi because that's a feature that I like. No monthly fees or minimums, and it takes just 10 minutes to sign up. Head on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets for stress-free banking. You can join me because I'm heading on over there right now. I'm heading on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets. Relay is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Thread Bank, member FDIC. The Relay Visa debit card is issued by Thread Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted.
So this is awesome. So now you've got this company where you've got phone calls and then acquisitions and then dispositions. Let's hear a little bit how you've scaled that to what it is now.
Yeah. So it was really, I had a lot of advice from people who had been in the business a long time. I didn't listen to any of it. They were all like that, you know, more checks is not always better, you know, slow down a little bit. I was like, no, I'm going to keep hiring and we're going to go to every market in the world. We're going to wholesale from Washington to Australia. And we had 10, 12 guys in the office and crazy overhead. We were spending like 40 to 60 grand a month in marketing at one point, across cold calling and mail and everything. And we got to the point where I had a bad burnout a year and a half ago. Cause I was like, I realized I should just go, if I'm going to do all this work to bring home what I'm bringing home, I might as well just go get a job. And I, at that point it clicked. I'm like, this is what everyone's been telling me. I just went to a mastermind and I was told this stuff and it's happening. And so from there, I'm like, okay, we're going to redo this. We're going to keep our fundamentals and our foundation, but build it up the right way. Because I always like the quote, I forget who it is, it was talking about, you can't build anything good on an unstable foundation. So our foundation, I had to go back down to the ground, and patch holes pretty much before I built back up. And that looked like pretty much clearing house. So we got all the way down to me and my new business partner, because me and my other business partner had separated. So we got back down to two people and we were still doing deals and making it happen. And then the right way, putting KPIs in place, making sure that we were actually making home money at the end of the month and then somewhat enjoying what we were doing. We started putting the pieces back together really, really slowly and carefully. So then now what our operation looks like now is we have a sales manager. We have a marketing management team. We have me. I still run dispositions. Just I love doing it and I like having a challenge, something to wake up and do. And then a transactions manager. So it's really simplified. Like what I was talking about before, we have everything segmented.
Before. You got your lieutenants in place.
Yes. Versus before it was 12 guys in an office running. It was like a frat house. It was a real estate frat house is what it was. We had something called Wine Wednesday where people would bring bottles of wine to them on Wednesday mornings. And it was a mess, but through that learned in my life is like, it's like day. And I'm glad I went through that. Cause I know like I'm never going that direction again.
But that's the pivot, right? Yep. You would never would have got to the point where you recognize I need to rebuild if you wouldn't have started building.
Yeah.
And it's very similar for me. 2020 was that year for me where I had to go back and I had to say, okay, the way I'm doing this is not going to get me where I want. It will get me forward, but not at the pace or the life that I want to have. Can you share a little bit about what that experience was like? Because it takes some faith when you step away from knowing I can take the shot to I got to trust other people to. You're probably making less money when you stop pushing forward and go back to rebuild it so that you can make more money later. And that's always scary because you don't know if it's going to work.
I think what did it for me is I was seeing so many like my personal problems become business problems. Like the stuff that was happening in my business was when I sat back and reflected, it was the same problems I was having in my personal life with, you know, not trusting people, not letting anyone let go of anything or have hard conversations. Mm-hmm. So I realized that I can fix this both places at the same time. So it really came with just absolute trust and willing to accept the consequences of that and learn from it. So before my previous partnership, we'd be micromanaging each other. Like, hey, you left the office at 3:50 today. I was here till 5:30, all that kind of stuff. Versus now it's he was responsible for. We talk and we check in with each other, but it's that absolute, almost not blind trust because we have stuff, KPIs we look at and stuff, but trust enough where I think you have my best interest. I have your best interest. And then learning from mistakes through that process. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. Do you have a system in place for having those difficult conversations?
So we talk once a week. Like we have a scheduled time for an hour. We sit down and we just, everything that's on our mind. Because I think the biggest thing that's hurt me in the past is business partnerships is letting stuff brew underneath the surface for weeks and months where like little things. And I was doing the same thing in my personal life with family and friends. And so instead of that, putting in guidelines in place to, hey, when something comes up, let's talk about it on Monday morning, mm-hmm. whatever it is, so that it doesn't brew. And, mm-hmm. and I found that when I'm getting all that stuff out, I'm so much more productive too.
Can I actually ask David a question here? Like, David, you do something, because on that point, it's so good, like not letting stuff brew and doing it. Now, David, you do something I've never known anybody else do, is you have a performance coach every single week meet with your real estate team. Can you just like that's right? And you're like,
yeah. And that's what's so impressive about the fact you figured this out at 22. I'm a little jealous, because at 22, I was nowhere close to being able to do any of this. But what we realize is those difficult conversations have to happen. Otherwise, resentment forms. And we were basically like being poisoned by different people on the team having resentment for different reasons. Not only do they have to happen, you have to have like a GPS check-in, right? Like you could be going the wrong way. And if you don't meet with everybody, that's when you get signal again and your GPS says, oh, you missed that turn. You got to go back around. You can go 6 months the wrong direction if you don't ever have these check-ins. So we sort of combined it all together where once a week, my real estate team, my mortgage team, and my operations team, I do three of these meetings, all get on a Zoom call with our performance coach, mm-hmm. who's basically there. He's a psychologist to mediate that so that it doesn't get out of hand. People don't get nasty. They can't take it personal. It's kind of like a relationship counselor for the business. Like if you and Heather go to a relationship counselor to discuss your marriage, you're not screaming at each other and bringing up hurtful things when there's a third party right there that's going to call you out on it. And that has been tremendous. It is expensive. That's what everyone says, is how could you possibly pay that much money? It's another one of those steps of faith. I know if we meet weekly, we discuss what's causing the resentment. We bring it to the surface. So it's not me versus them. It's really everybody on the team is all in agreement. We're committing to this is what we're going to do. Then it will turn into more revenue later. And I think that's part of why we've had so much growth. It's, I would never, ever, ever try to run a business without that method. So it's sort of like, you know, you mentioned your business problems and your personal problems were similar. That's what I was about to ask you. Do you have a coach? Because they're so good with this.
I have a lot of, that's another thing that I wanted to talk about, is how many people I've surrounded myself with that I would call mentors and coaches in some way. That's been the biggest reason that I am where I am. Like, and a lot of the hardest thing about that, I didn't hire a coach at first. Like when I got into real estate, I didn't have a performance coach or I didn't have a business coach, but I did have people in real estate that have been around for a while that I had added enough value to where it developed into a friendship and a mentorship, mm-hmm. where I could pretty much take any situation and call them any time of the day and say, here's what's going on. And it just accelerated me night and day. Now, where I'm right now, I do have a business coach, mm-hmm. and a personal coach that I like, three or four coaches that I pay, just because I found every time I do that and I commit more money to myself and my growth, I never regret it. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. And that's where I actually learned about that whole meet once a week, get everything off.
From your coach.
Yeah. It wasn't like a randomly one night where I was like, oh, I think a weekly meeting. For I can't take credit for that. But another thing it's done is we also have amazing ideas that come out of those sessions that we wouldn't have had. Cause when we're laying all of our issues on the table at the same time,
yep.
and seeing all that, and we put our brains together, we can plug holes faster and come. It's a pretty cool thing to see.
That's cool. So how many hours a week do you work right now? Do you say?
Oh man, this week in Maui,
bad example,
probably 10 to 20 active, like focused hours on the computer. Okay. I mean, the rest is phone calls and emails and where I'm needed. But like, cause I switched to more, I read the book Deep Work.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of switched to that model where I sit down in the morning and I give myself, you know, my three or five big things, 2 to 3 hours. I lock in, try to put my phone away, sit there, knock everything out. And then, cause I was bad when I first got started working, just because I felt good to work and I felt like I was in motion, but unlearning that and really sitting down, getting my work done, and then trying to enjoy my life. And that's another big thing, is what do I fill my free time with? It's been a challenge too, but yeah. So about, I would say 20 to 30 hours a week of.
That's cool. And you moved, right?
So September, kind of mid COVID, everything, I was drained. And I moved to San Diego with a couple of buddies.
Yeah, so, that's cool. But you're still doing all the work up in
Seattle. Yes, we're still at the office. I'm still up there. I try to be up there a week or two a month.
Okay.
And make sure we're rolling. But it's been awesome. I've learned so much just being away from the business and seeing, that's the ultimate letting go of the vine, is being in a different state. And
I know, David, you're doing the same thing right now where you came to Hawaii for like an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Like you're forcing yourself to figure out, how do I make this business a business and not just dependent upon myself? Like, what have you learned about that so far?
Well, what I learned is that my goal is to stay away until something breaks and then look and see why did that break. Not to the point that the whole thing could collapse, right? But that's kind of how you figure out where you've been cheating, where you're supposed to be the general, but you're actually in the field a little bit too much.
I love that.
When you take yourself out of it, and like, let's, you know, say that you've been putting more houses under contract than you probably should be. Your acquisition manager should have stronger skills when it comes to closing. Mm-hmm. But you step in and you just do what thing seems to you like the last one little percent, couple phone calls. And then you stop having them and you guys go from like 30% of what you were doing. And you think, holy cow, like how are we missing this much? You now immediately know my acquisition manager needs either more training or more accountability or more oversight or more skills, something so that they can get up there. A lot of the time what I found was that when my presence was there, I have somewhat of a strong presence. The agents on my team thought, oh, David will handle it. Mm-hmm. He'll take the shot. He'll do it. Yeah. When I walked away, they didn't have the confidence to actually go in there and get it done. They knew what to do. They knew how to do it, but they didn't have the confidence. And I had to step away for them to face that fear. Okay, I got to be the man or the woman. I got to get in here and do this. So like Brandon, what you mentioned was really smart. When you're in a business and you want to see what needs to be improved, step away. See where the water starts coming in. That's where your leak is.
Yeah, I couldn't really describe what I've been doing, but that you kind of describe what I've been doing in a kind of an unconscious way of just, yeah, what's been breaking. I fly back up there. I try to put it back
together. Plug the leak.
Put it back together better or try to, and then fly back down to San Diego. It happens again. Yeah, that's a great way to put that. Yeah.
I just can't believe you're doing this at 22 years old. I mean, have you been thinking that too as we're listening to this guy's story?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It comes with the mentors and coaches. It's just the, I love action. Like coming from sports, I just love to be in motion, action. I love to have something to do every day where I feel like I'm moving forward. I have this thing, I almost feel like I have to earn my free time and stuff. So I just love pushing the ball forward in some way.
Well, what it just shows to me is like, it shows us, If you want to be successful, like not you, anybody wants to be successful in any way, like there are a series of things that they can do that are very tangible. Yep. And you can find that out by talking, like you talk to these people, like you talk to Tarl Yarbor, you talk to Elliot Smith. You're like, what are you guys doing? Like you learn from these guys, you attend mastermind meetups, you learn and you're like, okay, I'm just going to put that into practice. And then it works. So I say this on the show a lot, like you should work so that success is not a surprise, right? Like nobody with a six pack ever woke up and goes, oh, I got a six pack. What? like nobody does that, right? Like nobody says like, I just ran a triathlon. How did I do I did the Ironman or the half Ironman, right? Last year. I was not surprised that I finished and like, I didn't do well. I wasn't surprised I didn't do well. I mean, I didn't do bad, but like I did exactly how I thought I would do because I did the level of work that would get me to exactly the level spot that I got. And so like, it's not a surprise that you are where you are today at all, because you're like, you did exactly what a person should do to be able to get in that spot. Mm-hmm. And so people are listening to this. Like it's really a fairly simple thing. Go find people who are already doing what you're doing or what you want to do. Find the people who are already doing what you want to do. Ask them like, what is it you do every day? Like what's the key there? And then do it. And the great thing is you don't have to ask them. You can listen to podcasts like this. Like everybody listening right now, a couple hundred thousand people can literally go do exactly what you did because you just shared everything that you did to get there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's more than that and they can get deeper and they get to know you, but like success is not super complicated. Mm-hmm. So one more question I have kind of before, you know, we start moving towards the famous four. And I know David, you had one more you wanted to ask too in there, but I'm curious, like, I know you added flipping to your business now. Mm-hmm. You start with wholesaling. I'm wondering like, why did you do that? And how has that been? Like, where do you see yourself headed with that?
Yeah. So we started flipping a couple months ago, mainly because we kind of felt like we hit a plateau and wanted to challenge ourselves again. We felt that would help not only create more revenue with flipping, but also help our main business because we service investors who are flipping. So to get to know that world a little better, we feel like we could package up deals way better on the front end. And then a lot of it was just the challenge of learning something new, building new relationships in that field and having a whole nother, I mean, we want to grow.
Yeah.
So that felt like a natural thing to grow into. And I know a lot of people do it in reverse. They go, flipping so hard, it sucks, it's wholesale. But for us, we feel like we're connected enough. We have a good enough relationship with people where we can make it happen and do it the right way. So big key of that was just wanting the challenge. Yeah.
That's cool. I love that you said like you're looking for a little bit more of a challenge there. I feel like that's such a sign of a strong team is when like, not that you get like bored necessarily of what the business is, because like business is getting really good at something, but you added another basically lane to your bridge. Like you built a bridge, it was working. You have people now working the bridge for you so you can relax a little bit more. You're like, how do we make this bridge stronger? How do we make this better? How do we get more cars across this bridge? So you add in a lane. You didn't go and start a, you know, like a wooden sunglasses business, right? But but you started to think, my Open Door Capital, we're this year, we've been having a lot of investors ask us this question about why aren't we getting into apartments? And we've been asking ourselves, should we add those on? So this year we're actually going to add on apartments, or add another bridge. Because not that we're bored of mobile home parks. I love mobile home parks and we're going to still do them. But I'm like, I want to add another lane to that to be stronger so we can do more deals, get more investors in, start a bigger fund. So like, for the exact same reason, it's like I love the challenge of going into something a little bit new. So you and I are in the
same we only did it like once we had our foundation really set.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key, right? That's the key is not building the bridge before you have the foundation set. That's huge.
Yeah. So it's been now that we have something that pays the bills and keeps like, a successful business, now we can kind of veer off a little bit. But I'm glad we waited as long as we did for that. Yeah.
That's cool. So what kind of where are you flipping at?
Mainly just King County, around Seattle, Pierce County a little bit too, which is a little more south, but we're trying to stay local just because that's where our relationships are. I lean a lot on people like James Daynard, who's been on this podcast before,
it's awesome.
Who helps us a lot. And it just makes it, I don't want to veer out too much where we're doing stuff that's, we're pulling permits and everything. We do like carpet paint, appliances, put on the market, in and out kind of stuff.
And you're getting all that stuff off market? You getting anything on market?
No, I've never done a deal off MLS in my life.
Really? Wow.
Not one. Out of the almost 200 transactions I've been a part of, not one of them has been an MLS deal.
Wow, that's cool. It's because you got really, really good at doing off market. And there's better deals off market if you're willing to put in the work needed to get there.
Yeah, you can pretty much write yourself a check because whatever you can negotiate and put together is paying yourself. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. All right, David, I know you had a question.
Yeah, before we do, I want to highlight your bridge analogy just for the people that are hearing this that are trying to figure out what we mean. Because I don't know if there's a better way of understanding what we're talking about when we're describing building a funnel or a business to run leads through. You have to look at every deal you close and sell like a car or a truck that was carrying goods it got from one location to another. And the more trucks you can get from one place to the other, the more money you can make. When we first start off, we're putting them on this bumpy dirt road. We've never done this before. We suck at it. We're getting halfway there and then we get a flat tire, the shocks break, you didn't put enough gas in. Every mistake you can imagine stops these and you barely get anything across just to be somewhat profitable. And then the more times you do it, the better you get at maybe driving or anticipating what route to take them on. At a certain point, you pave that road and cars, the deals can flow very much like with more simply. What Brandon is describing, what you're talking about is once you've got that bridge built that the cars and trucks can travel on, you start adding extra lanes, which are extra components to that business. The wholesale component, the flipping component, the retail sale component, maybe selling some of the services you put together to other people, a property management component. That's what it feels like when you're building a business, is you are trying to create an infrastructure that you can move deals up and down. And at a certain point when they can go 65 miles an hour and just poof, shoot right through, you got this passive business that it then you can stop or you can take your bridge skilling built abilities that you learned and go build another bridge somewhere and do another thing, which is what most entrepreneurs do. So thank you for, you know, kind of highlighting that that's the same thing that you're doing at, again, 22 years old. What the
heck? Yeah. All my spinoff businesses have come from not even on purpose, just we have this thing, we're using those other things to help that.
Yep.
Other people need that too.
That's exactly
cold,
right.
Yeah. So you guys have the cold calling thing, right? The cold calling
business? Yeah, so that's exactly how that happened. I started that internally because we needed to get 8 sales guys. We needed a lot of leads. So, and then Buddy was like, hey, can I use that? And then it just kind of, it was a natural thing of this works for us. Other people need the same thing. Here you go. But it wasn't a purposeful, I'm going to go out and start this really cool cold call center.
Yeah. You built it out of need. I'm going to, now other people are going to use it. Great. Like you leaned into it. It's very lean startup way to build a business.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. Same thing I'm trying to do. You just got like a 16-year head start on me, dude. It's very impressive. All right. So my last.
You live longer than me though. So who knows?
I don't know about that, man. I think I damaged my body quite a bit trying to figure out how to do all this stuff that you learned at, you know, going to Brandon's mastermind at 21 years old. My last question for you is, there's clearly something special about you that's different than other people where you discussed this.
It's a smile.
It's really nice.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In your eyes, they're very hypnotic. I find myself staring at you, forgetting what I was trying to say. You make it sound so simple to do what we're doing. In fact, you show, maybe I should re-say that, you reveal how simple it is when you get out of the obstacles that talk yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. To close, can you share a little bit about how you develop this mindset, what you do differently than other people so that others that want to follow this path can have an easier journey?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is most people operate like out of a model that's 99% information, 1% action. So they're gathering information all the time, but barely taking action on any of that information. So they're not, I don't feel like you accelerate as quick that way. For me, I'm always learning. I'd say I'm more like 70-30, 70% action, 30% information. So I'm always learning new things, but I'm taking really precise, deep action on everything I learn. So like an example of that was with cold calling. When I first started the cold calling side of my business, all I did was cold calling. I learned about cold calling, implemented what I knew about that, stuck with that for a long time, took extreme action on that instead of learning 6 different marketing channels and doing 10% on each one. So I think I've taken that and replicated across everything I've done. And I think that's what's allowed me, combined with the not really caring if I fail. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I haven't pinpointed where that's come from, to be honest with you. I think a sports helped a lot with that, but I don't know exactly where that never thinking about failing came from, like just it not being a thing to me. A lot of it was probably how I was raised in high. It was never like, you got to meet this grade, you got to do this. I could have graduated high school and been like, oh, I'm going to Africa to be a safari guide for the next 10 years. It would have been awesome. So I think a lot of it came from that, but I haven't nailed that down. But that combined with just going deep and showing up every single day with persistent and consistent action and the pursuit of my potential is like really what it comes down to. Like, I want to find out what I can do, what that bar is.
That's cool, man. Yeah. I love to hear that. I think that it's, yeah. I think again, if you can get the mindset of somebody successful and then just do what they're doing, like it's almost impossible not to achieve that level of success, especially given over the long haul. Yeah. You might encounter the market crashed or whatever. There's always a reason. Maybe somebody holds back temporarily, but long-term, like 5, 10, 15 years from now, like, I don't understand how anybody that listens to this podcast is not going to be a multimillionaire in the next like 5 or 10 years. Like everybody, if they just put into action the stuff, the mindset and the tactics, like it's just there for the taking.
Yep, which is what, emotion.
Yeah, it's so fun about real estate and entrepreneurship and all this. It's like it's just there. It's not just what you were given. It's like we can take whatever we want. You can have whatever you want, the kind of life that you want to lead, if you just are willing to put in the work needed to do it. The stuff that we've learned from you today is it doesn't even mean it's like 100 hours of work. Maybe there's times in your life where you have to really power through, right? But you put people in charge of different things, you scale up and you bring people in, you become a good manager and you get the higher dollar per hour skills and do that.
I think one of the biggest lies that stops a lot of people that in our culture is of the, work 100-hour weeks. I don't think you don't have to do that to be successful. There's ways to put stuff together with other people that it doesn't have to look like that. So,
yeah. And that's where I think like things like performance coaching come in so handy, where, Dan Sullivan, like the strategic coach that we had on, like what he said, his like company, like slogan or their mission or their goal is like that you, I think it was triple your revenue, was it? And then half the amount of time you work or something like that. Like their goal for everybody that they bring into their company is like, we're going to make you work half as much and you're going to make 2 or 3 times more money, like minimum. That's like their baseline. They just work toward. Again. And it might sound crazy to people listening, but like, I would almost say that's like way undershooting. Like, I feel like if I had a performance coaching business, I'd be like, our goal is have you work 4 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Like, we believe everybody can work 4 to 10 hours if you want to. Now, what else would we do with our time? So we all work more than 4 hours, but like, I want every person to be like, to get to that level where they can take a week off, take a month off, go travel to Hawaii for 3 months because they want to go hang out, go to Europe without a cell phone for a month. I want people to get to that level. So when they come back or spend time with their kids, it doesn't have to be travel. It could be spend time with kids. When they come back, they can like do what they love to do and invest in and be holy in it. So anyway, dude, this has been amazing. We got to wrap this up in a few, but first let's get to today's
famous four.
All right, let's get to the famous four. Question number one. These are the same 4 questions we ask every guest every week, so I'm sure you know it's coming. But number one, favorite, or I like to say favorite. I need to like rephrase this question, but basically favorite real estate investing book or book that's made the biggest impact on your real estate.
For me, it's the book called Flip by Nick Ruiz. He's a fix and flip guy out of Wisconsin. And that was the book I read when I was first getting into wholesaling. It's a really basic level bird's eye view into real estate, but it made it click in my head, like what I was doing, my path, where I could take it. So for me, that was business-wise, that's been I still reread that book. So it's definitely the biggest impact on me. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Favorite business-related book?
It has to be Traction. I was given that book.
I was going to ask what you use for your operating system.
Yeah, I was given that book. I have not been that good about following all that stuff, but I was given that book about 2 years ago and I'm decent at following a lot of it. Like a lot of the meeting stuff, the level 10 stuff. We do a lot of that, but I haven't been.
I would highly recommend, because we just did it open door capital, is bringing a consultant. Like, it's not super cheap. Like, it's thousands of dollars to have a consultant. But it's so, like, because, like, I feel like we were operating at, like, 85% traction, like, tractionable. Like, we were doing, like, 85% of the work there, and it was fine. Like, we were good. But that now we're at, like, 98%, I feel like. We're, like, and it's that little bit dial. Like, I probably cut 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week out of my own, like work just by bringing that consultant. Because all of a sudden, like, it just, like, fine tuning all these little things. And when you're operating at a business that's at a pretty high level, it's so good. So anyway, I'd highly recommend that, bring in some consultant.
So yeah, we need to take it up a notch with us. Yeah. We're probably at 50% right now.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. Which is better than, yeah. I mean, than 99% of businesses out there don't know how to run anything.
But it still opened my eyes to that direction. Yeah.
Cool, yeah. Man. All right.
All right. When you're not crushing it at business, what are some of your hobbies?
When I'm not crushing in a business, I'm skiing, or I'm playing basketball, or I'm working out, I'm on the beach. I love to travel, so I'm all over the place with that. But during the winter, you can find me on a mountain. Absolutely, I'm skiing. Summer, I'm on a boat, or I'm playing basketball on a boat.
I want to know, this is the three and a half question. If you and David Green here were competing against one another in a game of one-on-one basketball, who wins?
I'm going with me for sure.
Yeah. You think so? Yeah, yeah, you can dominate. Yeah. David's pretty good.
I would say you probably beat me one-on-one. Yeah. I'll just give you that. But yeah. if we put us on a team, we will destroy you.
I had a basketball hoop in the backyard. I don't have any more. So me and David against you, who wins that one? I'm still win. Probably going with me. All right.
I don't know. I can't. I put in a lot of work.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. You should claim that. Like, I like the confidence. That's great. All right. Last question for me. What separates successful real estate investors from all those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to staying in the game long enough for something to shake out. I think if you really want to be in real estate and make it work, and you're showing up every single day with, like we're talking about, persistent, consistent action, something is going to happen. So I think the main thing that separates people, yeah, there's mindsets behind that. There's tangible things you can do. But if you're in the game long enough, whether you're an agent or you're trying to flip or do development or you're doing buy and hold stuff, something is going to happen if you're in the game long enough. So I think that is the biggest thing.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last question of the day. Where can people find out more about you?
I'm most active on Instagram. It's at Cole Rude Johnson, RUUD. Is how you spell that, not Rudd. So yeah, I answer everything on there. I'm not great about Facebook or anything else. So that's where I spend most of my time.
Awesome. Right. What's your side businesses? Give them a plug, like in the cold calling stuff and everything else.
Yeah. So we have Call Magic Leads, and I partner with a couple of good buddies on. We are a full service call center for investors and agents. So we provide really good lead flow for that. And that was out of, I took it out of my internal business and we made it something awesome that other people can use. And then besides
what's website
that,
for that?
Callmagicleads.com. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep. Submit a form. It's super easy. Yeah.
Very cool. Yep. All right. Good deal, man. Thanks.
This has been
amazing.
It's fun.
This is fun. Yeah. It's been a long time coming. Ever since you were here in Maui last time, I was like, we got to get this guy on the podcast.
And I'm glad we did it in Maui. Makes it feel
this was much better doing it in person. Yes. Yeah. I like doing these in person seashed calls. So.
Absolutely. All right.
Well, David, you want to get us out of here?
Thanks, man. This has been great.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
David Green for Brandon. It's Roof, not Russ Turner. Signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, FOUR, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.